Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass, and it is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. College football happened over the weekend. Josh Hader blew a save. Yordan Alvarez destroyed his knee by sliding into second base. And the Houston Texans get embarrassed in Minnesota, falling by 27 points, the largest margin of defeat in the D'Amico Ryans era.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Who? Who has a case of the Mondays? Define who has the case of the Mondays.
All Texans fans.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people have a case of the Mondays. I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm not too, like, depressed with this loss, although it wasn't very good. It wasn't very pretty. I don't even know where to begin. For me, Blankers, I think the Texans never felt comfortable. Like, even from the moment that game was kicked off, first offensive series, they felt uncomfortable, and then it was just like a tidal wave of skull momentum the rest of the way. You had opportunities to break the momentum, whether it was like, you know, score in the first half, whether it's get a stop at the start of the second half. You scored a touchdown to make it a 14-point game with about 4 minutes left to go in the third quarter. Get a stop and a score there. All of a sudden, it's a one-possession game with about 10 minutes left to play. It never felt like the Texans got comfortable in the game, throwing all the penalties, throwing the turnovers, throwing the momentum. And that every time they had a chance to do that, they just couldn't.
Yeah, no, and I think that a majority of the penalties happened on third down, a lot of times after a completion where it looked like they were finally building some momentum. I had someone come up to me this morning and tell me they knew it was going to be jinxed and an awful day for the Texans when they had to do the re-kick of the kickoff so that they could get the big Viking horn blow off before
Which
the
one?
Game.
There was two. Like, they had to re-kick it at each half.
Right, so I know, but they said to start the game, evidently the kickoff happened too soon because right before the kickoff, they're supposed to do that, and they didn't do it, so they redid it for that.
I don't think that's why they redid it. I think they redid it for TV.
I think the young kicker they said jumped the gun, and the referee he thought signaled, and they didn't. But regardless, I mean, look, you're right. They did not look good. I did not feel good about it the entire game. I kept hoping that they would do something different. I thought from the second half standpoint, I thought they'd come out and adjust. The fact that they were giving such a pad to Justin Jefferson all day long was, I mean, unbelievable to me because of the fact you were just letting him run free, get full momentum, get wide open. Darnold had all day. CJ didn't. I was constantly concerned about the fact that he was just under duress seemingly all afternoon. They couldn't do anything right. And you look at the offensive line and you would think, well, probably, you know, you would assume guys were out. Guys weren't out. That was just a really, really bad performance overall, and the line was terrible.
Yeah, they couldn't do wrong right. In addition to that, I felt like they were outcoached. If you look at the matchup between Kevin O'Connell and D'Amico Ryans yesterday, Kevin O'Connell won that by a landslide. I like Kevin O'Connell, by the way. I think he's a really good coach. I was impressed listening to him all week long and after the game yesterday. But he easily outcoached D'Amico Ryans. One of the big questions we had, would Derek Stingley travel? Nope. Derek Stingley didn't travel. How are they defend Justin Jefferson? You mentioned the free releases. Justin Jefferson in the first half did to the Texans what Amari Cooper did to the Texans last year in the regular season. I wonder if D'Amico's a little stubborn. Because, like, you go back to that Amari Cooper game, he refused to travel Derek Stingley in the regular season. Did it for one series when Steven Nelson had to leave the game with an injury. Then when Nelson came back, he went back to not following Stingley and shadowing Amari Cooper. Then in the playoffs, he switched it up. Yesterday, he didn't do that. Nope. He used Derek Stingley on one half of the field. He used Kamari Lassiter on one side of the field. And then they were allowing Justin Jefferson, and you heard the broadcasters, Charles Johnson or Robinson, talking about the entire game. they're allowing him free releases, free releases, free releases. And whenever you're going up against arguably the best receiver in the NFL, that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it really is. And I think you mentioned it. You just have to wonder at a certain point, like, why didn't you just do what you did in the playoffs when it worked, when you know how good of a corner that you have, and when you know how good of a receiver Justin Jefferson is, and Addison's out, just do what you have to do to take him out of the equation. It's the old Belichick philosophy of take away your biggest weapon or what you do best, and then make you do something else to beat me. And they just seemed to not do that all game long, and it was frustrating because of the fact that Jefferson was getting whatever he wanted. Aaron Jones, on the other hand, too, for a defense that we were all feeling so very good about because of how they had played so far, they were getting run over, they were getting passed over, and they just weren't getting any pressure on Sam Darnold to where they could get anything off kilter for the Vikings.
Yeah, I thought it was sporadic. I thought at times you got a little bit of pressure, like Tim Settle, of all people, had a couple of sacks, but it just wasn't consistent enough. And even whenever you did create a little bit of pressure, Sam Darnold, of all people, was able to make some off-script plays, like the first touchdown to Jefferson. That was off-script. He was running out of the pocket. Justin Jefferson broke loose because Eric Murray slipped in the end zone, fell down. Justin Jefferson was as wide open as you could get. And then on the other side of the ball, the matchup between Bobby Slowick and Brian Flores, I'm not sure which side the Texans lost more. They lost D'Amico Ryans, Kevin O'Connell, no doubt. They lost Bobby Slowick, Brian Flores. I don't know which side of the ball they lost worse. I would guess offensively, because John Grenard feasted on the Houston Texans. When the Texans' offense was on the field, John Grenard was easily the best player on the field. And Bobby Slowick is freaking using Cade Stover to try to block John Grenard, which is a slap in the face to John Grenard. John Grenard has to feel disrespected by the Houston Texans, right? They had preliminary contract negotiations, but never gave him an offer. They signed old man Danielle Hunter instead of bringing back John Grenard, who had a career year. And then they're using Cade Stover, a rookie tight end, to try to block him. I bet you John Grenard in that moment felt like the Houston Texans were spitting in his face.
He actually said it after the game that he was how disrespectful. I don't know if he used disrespectful.
The exact quote, first play of the game, they tried to block me with a rook. Grenard told the Chronicle as he left the locker room. They tried to block me with a rookie tight end. It's disrespectful. I ain't never seen that. Double negative, but you pay him for sacks, not for his grammar.
And they did it multiple times. They used him another time outside of left tackle to try and do it. It was just like, what are you trying to set yourself up for? A massive disaster on multiple plays. And I think that to your question, I think they lost both in a landslide. I would lean on the fact that we talked all week about how good Brian Flores was as a defensive coordinator, regardless of anything else that's happened with him with head coaching opportunities. He proved just how good he can be defensively with the weapons that he has. Almost every ex-Texan was doing something all over the football field, but he had guys coming from all different angles. He had that push up the middle, constantly showing just how vulnerable the inside part of the offensive line was. On almost every dropback, CJ felt a push coming right up in his face that he had to move out of the way of. And I thought Brian Flores was genius in the way he moved his defense around.
Yeah, that was it was a mismatch on both sides of the football, and that was very, very disappointing to see. Grenard was outstanding. I think it's time. It's only been one game. I think Irv Smith gives you a better option as tight end number two for the Houston Texans than Cade Stover. Cade Stover has looked better as a fullback than he has a tight end.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that if you want to use him as your replacement at fullback when they do get the running game going like they used with Mixon in week one, then that's fine. But I think that he is a rookie, and you know they knew when they drafted him that he had work to do, and he got worked. I mean, he needs to learn some things and really kind of get settled in the NFL in a lot of ways before you rely on him that heavily. And to be honest, Jeremy, one of the things that I really was annoyed by all day was the tight end position, period. Because I think Dalton Schultz looked disinterested. Dalton Schultz didn't show me a lot of effort. The one ball that Charles Davis, I think, mentioned it, but I went back and I rewound it like two or three times going, that ball is, I love the way that CJ threads the ball with touch over the top of the first layer of the defense and drops it in. And Dalton Schultz was open with a linebacker behind him, and he alligator armed it, and he could have caught that football if he just gave a little more effort. There was a couple of those.
That one stood out to me too. I thought, I was like, dude, go make a play.
Yes.
I thought it was a really good place ball, and Schultz just kind of nonchalantly went up for it. He had another one on the sideline where he kind of went at it, and then he had the very near fumble.
Right, like, right. He looked like he had a whole lot of don't want to, and it's like, they took care of you. You've got this really good football team that everybody keeps talking about in a positive light. You're a big part of that if you just play your game. And it looked like he didn't give a rat's ass what he did on the football field or how much effort he gave.
Yeah, there was he didn't get Kate Stovered by John Gernard, but there was another play. I think it was John Gernard. Not exactly sure which defensive lineman it was, but I'm pretty sure it was John Gernard, where he didn't get blown up like Stover, but he got pushed right into C.J. Stroud. Like, it wasn't as big a highlight play, but it was equally ineffective, where he basically was the one who got to C.J. Stroud and created the pressure because he was being driven backwards. Yeah, I thought Schultz played incredibly poorly yesterday. I thought there was bad complimentary football on this one, too. Like, mentioned it a little bit ago. The Texans, for as bad as they played, were within 14 with 3:45 mm-hmm. left in the third. Like, they had a chance with 3:45 left in the third, as bad as they played. What happens after that touchdown? Which, you know, the Texans actually moved the ball a little bit here and there. Like, yes, they were just terrorized by penalties. I thought that they moved it somewhat okay, considering what the score was, that they only scored one touchdown. Like, they actually moved it at times pretty good, with the exception of scoring points. You missed a field goal, you had some penalties as soon as you got across to the Viking side of the field, et cetera, et cetera. But you pulled to within 14 the first time that you get into the end zone. What happens immediately after that? Kymie Fairbairn kicks the ball out of bounds, setting up the Vikings for good field position. They then go on a drive that lasts about 5-6 minutes, get a field goal out of it, and just like that, it's a three-possession yep. game. Like, you had an opportunity there. Complimentary football. Go get a three and out. Get the football with, you know, right at the start of the fourth quarter or a little bit of time left in the third quarter. And you have an opportunity to go score and maybe make it a one-possession game with 10, 12 minutes left to play. Nope. Kick it out of bounds, allow a scoring drive that allows the Vikings to immediately take it to three possessions yet again.
Yeah, and just put, and then the fourth quarter after that was just a debacle. The fourth down they had to try and go for that they had no chance of getting. They just, like, once they entered the fourth quarter, the game was already over, and it was because of the fact this was still Sam Darnold. He made a couple of passes. He made it a backhanded push pass that somehow not only got through, but it looked like it could have gotten broken up, but it was caught. He made that stupid little pass to Aaron Jones with defenders all over in the area that it was ruled incomplete, but that could have been, you could have tried to do something there. It's Sam Darnold. I mean, you look at his whole career. If you just put pressure on him, you should be able to do something to him, and they just couldn't get home. They couldn't do anything to kind of change the momentum once Minnesota got the ball back.
See, I think they created more pressure than you're giving them credit for. I just feel like they were able to handle it. Like, I think they were able to handle it. I think Sam Darnold at times was pretty good at improvising.
He moved better than I give him credit for, because he was more athletic than I give him credit for. He was able to kind of scramble around, change, you know, get out of the pocket, gain some yardage. You're right in that a couple times I was watching Will Anderson. He was close to getting home. I thought Hunter had a couple of chances to get home. But overall, that's not the same defense I saw the first 2 weeks of the season. And I think credit to the Vikings in terms of their offensive line, too, and the way that they were able to run the football, because Aaron Jones looked pretty damn good, too.
Yeah, went over a hundo. Pretty easy game for the Vikings, who maybe they're better than we think. Maybe the Vikings are better than we think. The defense certainly is pretty good. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll look at every angle of this game. How did C.J. Stroud perform? Worst performance in the D'Amico Ryans era? Mailbag Monday. We'll get into I Believe. What do you believe after the college football weekend? We're going to have the Laramie Tunsil conversation. Lance kind of went scorched earth on Laramie Tunsil a little bit earlier today. And then there's something that I feel like nobody's talking about, with something that D'Amico Ryans did yesterday that we'll get to as well. Yordan Alvarez, the walking glass man, injured, hopefully, you know, knocking on wood that it's decent news. Steve Sparks seems to think that it's decent news. Hopefully Steve Sparks is right. I saw some tweets yesterday saying that it was uncharacteristic for the amount of times the Houston Texans were penalized yesterday. Is that an accurate statement? I did a deep dive. And also, the question I have for you, are the Texans an undisciplined football team? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on the YouTube at ESPN Houston, on the Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel, Brian's at Sack by BMAC, I'm at Jeremy Branham. It is the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN92.5. Look, basketball season's right around the corner. Practices will be starting soon at the college level. They're going to be starting pretty soon at the professional level. Some guys are just up and retiring. But it is the season to get a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. Look, if you're getting a goal, you might as well do it right, right? And Pro Dunk Hoops makes the highest quality basketball goals that you'll find. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel. It's stainless steel hardware. That's great. Rust-proof, you have to have that in Houston. Breakaway rim, and it's height adjustable. Yeah, you can throw down some jams. You can act like Vince Carter. Anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet, you can lower it, raise it all the way up. Whatever you want to do, you can do it with a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. Also, their new goal, Thor. You can raise and lower the goals with a drill. So easy to do. It's called a lightning adjust feature. 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Easy to do, fun to do, and it's idiot-proof for a guy like me. Their accessories are next level, too. LED night kits for night play. Look, the kids are at school, right? You're at work. I understand. It's still hot during the day. You only want to play at night when it cools down or you're home. Get an LED light kit. That way you can use your goal at night. Backstop nets. You don't have to waste your time chasing after the basketball, pole pad lettering, and lots more. And you can order all of this, including professional installation, online. That's right. The pros from Pro Dunk professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do all of the work for you. Give them a call now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Way too many penalties again. That starts with me. It's too many penalties, back-to-back game, over 10 penalties. It's unacceptable. You can't win that way when we have something positive going. We negate it by the penalty, so that just... Oh, God, this is zapped the energy out of everyone.
You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I paid up my bet. Blankers and I had a bet. I think you were out one day. Were you out one day last week, Brian? Or was that the week before?
No, I think I was here every day last week.
Oh, you're out so much I can't keep count. Well, we made that bet last week where 7.5 penalties over under. I took the under, lost miserably. So I paid up the bet.
You did.
I don't like to, although I owe you on the Jordan one, too. You won that one, even though he did get hurt. So D'Amico's talking about the penalties here.
Hope it was worth it, Joel.
Huh?
Hope it was worth it. Hope it was worth it. I knew that was going to be the bet.
I knew that was going to be the end result. Yeah, no, he wasn't playing the outfield when he got hurt.
11 penalties, 88 yards for the Houston Texans yesterday. Laremy Tunsil, I think, had all of these. We'll talk about Laremy Tunsil later. Pre-snap penalties offensively. You had some big penalties defensively. Like we mentioned that, you know, you could have had a complimentary stop. Danielle Hunter got called for a roughing the passer, which I actually thought was a bad call. He got blocked into the feet of the quarterback.
I thought he got pushed into him.
And then you had the Petrie pass interference in the second half as well. I actually thought that was a good call.
I didn't think he had to do it.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Yeah, I think that was on him. It was stupidity in the fact that you didn't have to put your hands on him. I don't think it was catchable, and I thought he was in a good enough position. He didn't have to do it.
I'm a little worried that Petrie can't cover without using his hands.
I think that might be true. We saw it last year a lot, too, and I think that was the biggest concern. I love the fact that you move him to the slot. My biggest concern was coverage. We know he likes to get in the box. He likes to stick his nose in there and make tackles. But he had a lot of issues covering last year at safety and deep balls and such and angles. He's got to do it still, and it doesn't look great.
So I saw some tweets yesterday saying that the Texans getting penalized is uncharacteristic for a D'Amico Ryans team. They had double-digit penalties last week. They had 11 penalties yesterday. So I was like, is that uncharacteristic for a D'Amico Ryans team? Is that accurate that the Houston Texans are a team that do not get penalized? Take a guess where the Houston Texans ranked last year in penalties in the NFL. Just total amount of penalties called for teams in the NFL. Just take a guess 12. Where the Houston Texans ended up. Not even close.
Really?
Not even close. They were in the top half, but not even close to 12. Not even close to 12.
19th.
If you say 11, you would have won. No, I said they were in the top half.
I guess I didn't hear that
they
part.
Were fourth. They were the fourth most penalized team last year. They were one penalty away from being tied for second. Jets were the most, 124. Browns and Cowboys tied for second at 115. The Texans were at 114. So the Texans were the fourth most penalized team last year in the NFL, one penalty away from being tied for second. So the idea that D'Amico Ryan's teams are, it's uncharacteristic that they're being penalized so much. According to what? According to what? They were one of the most penalized teams in the NFL last year. Okay, what about this year? What about 2024? And yes, it's only 3 weeks. You can't draw a conclusion for the entire season based on 3 games. Yes, there are still some Monday Night Football games, 2 Monday Night Football games to be played tonight. So perhaps one of these 4 teams that are playing on Monday night or a couple of these teams that are playing on Monday night will pass the Texans. The Texans are currently third. They're third in the NFL with 28 penalties behind the Ravens at 31, behind the Browns at 29. So the Texans were fourth last year. They are currently third this year. In what world is it uncharacteristic for a D'Amico Ryans team to be a team that's committing tons of penalties? I would say it's the opposite. I would say this is the norm.
It's more of something that I don't think people focused enough time on, because the team had success last year because they got off to the start that they got this year. When you looked at it, and you and I talked about it a week ago, I was already concerned, and I'm shocked that Dallas wasn't number one last year, because seemingly getting that those games as much as we did too, they were constantly in double digits. I guess I didn't watch enough Jets games, but I was shocked that Dallas wasn't number one, because McCarthy looked like, and rightfully so, it looks like a guy that doesn't have control, or he's not doing enough, because from that aspect of it, because it never went away. It never stopped. It never slowed down. That was my concern coming out of last week, was the fact that when you get that many penalties, that's not just, oh, one of those refereeing crews that were focused on a point of emphasis and or a few penalties here and there. That was bad. And I put it to a level of concern where it needed to be fixed. I'm not sure how quickly they can fix it. Now it really needs to be a point of emphasis for them.
Shouldn't it always be, though?
Yeah, like, it should be, but different people coach differently, I guess. But at the same time, because this – I heard Paul and Joe talking about Tunsil's penalties over the last – since 2019 or something like that. It's 40 penalties Tunsil's had for moving on the offensive line, and the whole offensive line was not good. But, I mean, you would think the offensive line coaches are working with this offensive line. Also, going into that building, and we talked about it how many times, it's a loud place to play. You need to be prepared for that, whether it's, depending on what count you use and how you're going to go about your business. But you have to already anticipate the fact that you'll get false starts if you're not completely prepared for a building that's going to be that raucous loud with a roof on it. But it's an issue that they have to work on. I just don't know how quick they're going to be able to fix it.
Yeah, I think this is a characteristic of a D'Amico Ryans team. I think the proof is in the pudding. And some coaches are okay with penalties more than others. It's like, okay, we want to be – now, the pre-snap stuff is where it's frustrating. But some coaches, like especially defensive coaches, it's like, okay, we can live with a pass interference every now and then, because we want to err on the side of being a physical team. We want to err on the side of being a team who's sticky in coverage. We want to err on the side of getting to the quarterback. So there are some philosophies that we can live with some penalties. But whenever you're fourth in the league and you're currently third in the league, yes, a small sample, you cannot tell me that it's uncharacteristic of the Houston Texans to be penalized so much. Because the fact is, it's not true. They are a team that gets penalized a ton.
I'm curious, too, like how many of those are offensive penalties? Because to me,
I'm curious how many of those are Laramie Tunsil's.
That's what I'm saying. Because
well, you can look it up. I mean, Tunsil has nine right now, doesn't he?
But I would be curious, because even yesterday during the game, they said between the Vikings and the Texans, obviously the Texans had a lot more than the Vikings. They said every penalty through the first, I think, 10 calls were all on the offense, that they didn't have a defensive penalty. It might have been until the Petrie PI that they didn't have a defensive penalty in the game. But I just, to me, it seems like the majority of the Texans' penalties seem to come from the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, I mean, you get a good amount defensively, though. I mean, you just look at the game. You had Petrie yesterday. You had Danielle Hunter yesterday. There was I can't think of any more off the top of my head, but that's two there.
You said Hunter and Petrie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think other than that. I can't really think of any. But the fact is because we see Tunsil do it, I think he's averaging a penalty every game and a half, but it seems like it's been more lately. But it's not just him. I mean, Howard had one last week. Kenyon
Tunsil
Green
has
had
nine
one.
On the year, for what it's worth.
And Green and Howard. And, you just look at it and you're like, I don't know if it's an offensive line coaching thing, too.
You're onto something there.
There has to be something done to focus clearly on the snap counts, the buildings you're playing in, and be as prepared as you can possibly be so that this isn't happening anymore. And look, we've talked about this before. You know damn well that the officials came into the teams and met with the teams preseason and prior to preseason and said, point of emphasis this year, we are not going to let this whole Chiefs offensive line thing go anymore, where you're basically tilted halfway into the backfield already with an angle to slow down the defensive ends. You knew it. We saw it from week one on. The helmet of the other lineman have to be in line with the belt line of the center. Tunsil just kept doing it.
Yeah, he kept doing it. And D'Amico was, I can't remember if it was today or yesterday, but D'Amico was asked about, you know, the referees talking to you, and that's something that they went around to all of these teams, and they told them, like, these are the point of emphasis this year. Whenever I used to cover the Texans, I was in one of the referee briefings. Yeah. Like, they brought in the media. Here are the things we are looking for this year. And they've made it very clear that that's the stuff that they're looking for this year. And I can understand the player frustrations where it's been a little bit gray. Like, there are times when they line up probably off the line that they're getting away with, and there's other times they're lining up in the same exact spot and they're being penalized for it. The truth of the matter is they probably should have been penalized for it both times. It is a point of emphasis. And I think that what the players need to start doing, like if it happens one time, it's like, okay, ticky-tack, they're not going to allow us to get away with it today. Okay, I can deal with one. It's kind of one of the, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. The moment that it happens one time, why aren't you looking to the line judge and be like, hey, am I on?
Right.
Receivers do it every single play. A receiver does it every single play. Why wouldn't you, after you've been penalized for it one time, either go talk to the official, or secondly, every single time that you're lining up, point to the official, let him know, hey, am I on? And they're going to give you an answer. And at that point, you're putting the onus on him, because yes. Now it's he has to give me an answer in this moment, and now I know before the snap of the football. But, so for this to happen to a single player multiple times, I think is laziness.
The other thing, too, is that you mentioned it. The message is sent with the first one that gets called, especially when you know no one really was anticipating that there was a hold or anything else. It's kind of like that's the message sent. Hey, look, this crew, they're going to be focused on that. We knew Monday night, I think it was in week one, they were going to, on national TV, they were going to make that a big deal, and we saw it right away because when you look at the replay, the offensive line wasn't doing anything other than they had done all of last season. But you're right. You should be checking it. The officials are there. They're not going to sit there and, like, you know, turn the other cheek to you. And the receivers do it all the time. You've got to be willing to care about your craft enough that you accept the fact that, hey, for me, until, you know, you go to a certain point on the line, but until you get set, you can look, you can ask. And if you talk to him prior to that, all it takes is a head nod or a shake of the head.
Yeah. That to me, and a lot of people, oh, they're not calling it fairly. No, that's all. It's your job. You get one. Whatever Ed Hockley's son name is, he was the one that was on the season opener with Baltimore and Kansas City. His crew calls it a lot. But in fairness to the officials, if they're not calling it, they're being docked by the league, which could potentially cost them postseason assignments. So I don't blame the officials for being sticklers on it if they're going to be graded based on how they're officiating that play. So you get one. Okay, this crew's not going to allow us to get away with it. You get one, Laremy Tunsil. You get one, Titus Howard. You get one, really, the tacklers do the ones that are in question here. And in the moment it happens once, I need you to either A, have a conversation with the officials to hey, where do I need to line up? Or B, talk to the line judge before every single snap. Not doing so, I think, is a little bit of a lack of accountability. And then the whole, like yesterday with the penalties, and look, I think the Texans are a heavily penalized team. The idea that, oh, it's uncharacteristic, they get penalized. No, it's not. They were fourth in the league last year. But specifically in that game yesterday, the penalties wiped off three 15-yard gains or more. 15-yard gain, C.J. to Nico, erased. 17-yard gain, C.J. to Hutchinson, erased. 15-yard gain, C.J. to Tank Dell, erased. That's how, like we just had a texter saying, you know, the penalties, you look at it, 11 penalties, 88 yards. That's not too bad considering 8.8 yards per penalty. But then you look at the sunk cost of it. Yeah, it might be 11 for 88. That doesn't look as bad because you're, like, thinking 11 penalties, it should be over 100 yards. But look what it took away. It took away two 17-yard gains. It took away a 15-yard gain that derails drives.
Yeah, because the when is the most important thing, not the yards you're penalized. Because if you're already sitting behind the chains at 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, now you're sitting at 3rd and 14, 3rd and 15, chances are they're going to run a draw or a quick screen and get the hell out, and they're punting, as opposed to the fact that you're right. When you did have the play run, it negated the fact that you got a first down, you got a chunk play, you kept a drive alive. But then to redo the play after the penalty, in most cases, they just ran the football or they took a short gain and decided to kick it away because they knew it was too deep of a hole to try and dig out of, and they didn't want to take the chance of getting something picked off.
Yeah. It's to me, it's not so much always the penalty yardage. It's, okay, what did it do for the drive? Three different occasions it wiped out a first down on drives that could have ended in points, and now all of a sudden you go from a 3rd and 5 converting on a 17-yard gain into Vikings territory. Now it's a 3rd and 15, and you're one play away from punting.
Yeah.
It kills drives.
That's the frustration of all of it. And like I said, For years in the NBA, they did the same stuff. The referees went around to every single camp, and they said, this is what we're focusing on. It's a no-brainer. We knew it. Everyone in the league that watches football knows it. This is something they are out to change because of the fact that it was getting too egregious with the way the offensive linemen were cheating to get ahead of the defensive rush. So if you know it, and then you know early on they're calling it, because I believe 5 of the 11 penalties were on third downs. That's awful. Right there in itself, because that is a momentum killer for a game.
I mean, good luck converting, you know.
Yeah.
And some of these you were converting, and they get wiped off, and then all of a sudden you're looking at a third down and 10. 713-780 ESPN HRMP listener line. How much are you concerned about the Texans' penalty tracker? Are they an undisciplined football team? And then what's your concern for this Texans' offensive line? 713-780 ESPN, the HRMP listener line. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Oktoberfest is back. Yes, it's that time of year. Fall is around the corner, and Oktoberfest is coming soon. Make plans now, Saturday, October 5th, Sunday, October 6th, for Oktoberfest on the Kima Boardwalk. German beer, yes, please. German food, yes, please. Live music, cornhole tournament, stein-holding competitions, costume contest, and much, much more. It's going to be a great time, as it always is. Also, it's free for you to attend, walk around, so head out there October 5th and 6th. Beer tickets, beer steins, food tickets can be purchased at the event, or you can do it online today. Beer including Shiner Oktoberfest, Shinerbock, New Belgium Atomic Pumpkin, New Belgium Voodoo Juicy Haze IPA, New Belgium Fat Tire IPA, Blue Moon Belgian White, Yingling Oktoberfest, Miller Lite, Bud Light. Souvenir steins available for purchase now at Kima Boardwalk. KimaBoardwalk.com while supplies last, so get that done now. And the food at Oktoberfest, unbelievable. Schnitzel on a stick? How good is that? German beer bratwurst, sausage on a stick, German potato salad, and then the soft pretzel with the beer cheese. Going to be so good. Get out there Saturday, October 5th. Live music 1 to 5. Costume contest at 5:30. Live music by Big City Nights that evening. There'll be a stein-holding competition at 6. Cornhole tournament at 6:30. Then on Sunday, more live music from noon until 4. Another costume contest. Live music 5 to 9. Stein-holding competition and a cornhole tournament. It's going to be so much fun. Get out to Oktoberfest Saturday, October 5th, Sunday, October 6th. Then you can see the full schedule of events and concert lineup at KimaBoardwalk.com. That's KimaBoardwalk.com.
ESPN 97.5.
To be a good football team, you have to win in the trenches. It all starts there. So O-line and D-line for me did not play well enough today to help us win the game.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That's pretty strong from D'Amico. I didn't feel like our offensive line was good enough to win the game. Like that... I don't want to say throwing the team under the bus because it's a very honest statement. They weren't good enough. They weren't good enough on the offensive line. You look at some of these, like the blitz numbers and stuff that C.J. Stroud, they weren't very good at the blitz. I didn't think that he was actually that poor against the blitz. A 16 of 37 dropbacks, highest blitz rate that he's faced in his career. On those plays, he was 8 for 15 for 94 yards, including a touchdown and interception and a sack. That's not bad against the blitz. That's actually okay. The issues to me, and I went back and watched the condensed game this morning. The All-22 is not out yet. Again, and then this was my fear going into this game, and I thought DJ Bienema really broke it, like nailed his assessment of what this game was going to look like with Brian Flores. So many times the Vikings are getting to C.J. Stroud with a four-man rush. How can you consistently and constantly allow an opposing defense to get to the quarterback with a four-man rush? The Colts were having success with it in week one. You saw Eberflus do it a lot in week two, especially in the second half, in which the Texans didn't score a point, or they scored 3 points. And then yesterday against the Vikings, Brian Flores, yes, he was blitzing a lot, The Texans, I thought, actually did okay against the blitz. It was more of an issue that the Vikings, yet again, another team, getting home with a four-man rush, throwing stunts at the Houston Texans. So many times, the Vikings are sending four, and the Houston Texans, they're five offensive linemen. You have two guys blocking one guy. You have a free rusher with a four-man rush, for goodness sakes. The stunts, the games, exposed again to this Texans offensive line.
No question about it. And when you look at the amount of money that was paid to put this line together, when you look at the concerns we had even going into training camp, and then you look at the fact that early in the season, the Bears are supposedly a good defense. They held their own. But you're right, the second half was a totally different story than the first half. To that point, the Texans really didn't make any adjustments. I thought at some point during the first half, but especially after halftime, they would make adjustments to try and do what they had to do to try and create more time for CJ and be more efficient offensively to give him a little bit more time, even if it was the pistol or doing some things to try and change something with chips and fullbacks just to give him enough time, because there were plays to be had. You saw some of the plays we talked about that were negated by penalties. But overall, this was a line that if you were starting Patterson or you had to get, you know, you had to make a lot of makeshift changes, you would say, okay, that's one of those games. Coming off the first two games that they had, you didn't expect to see this. And the fact that throughout the game, it almost seemingly was getting worse was a problem, because CJ was trying to do everything he could to buy himself an extra second or two. Some of the throws that he made while he had guys in his face were really, really good throws that were just either not completed or they didn't get past the sticks. But it's just unacceptable for a line that has veteran players on it like you have, that's getting paid what they're being paid, that looked at on paper at the start of the year and what they did in the first 2 weeks, like a line that could be top half of the league to top 10-ish, now looks like anything but that.
Yeah, see, I think this is, the more I think about this, and then you can also factor in the fact that they're not lining up appropriately, you know, the false starts are maybe an entity of itself, because it seems to be a Laramie Tunsil issue more than like everybody else. But I'm wondering how coached up this offensive line is, because I don't think that this offensive line lacks talent. Laramie Tunsil, post-snap, is one of the best left tackles in the entire NFL. He is. If he's not committing a false start or lining up inappropriately, once the ball is snapped, if he hasn't killed the play with a penalty, he is one of the very best at his position after the snap. Kenyon Green, might not like Kenyon Green, might have wanted Kyle Hamilton, is a first-round left guard. Juice Scruggs was somebody that you drafted in the second round. Shaq Mason's a veteran that's solid. Titus Howard, not only did you draft him in the first round, you gave him top five right tackle money, which, you know, is probably a different conversation for a different day and if he's overpaid or not. But the offensive line does not lack talent. So why is the offensive line struggling? Because if you go, like, the Texans, there's not many plays where the Texans' offensive line, their five, if they're going man-on-man, it's just block versus block, mano-a-mano, they usually don't get beat there. There's a few occasions here and there. Kenyon Green got beat really bad last week. I'm sure whenever we watch the film, there'll be a few occasions this week. But that happens in the NFL. It isn't so much a mano mess up. It's not them getting manhandled. It's not them losing one-on-one. Usually it's them passing off coverage. Usually it's communication. Usually it's, oh, the defensive end's running a stunt and the defensive tackle's taking out the right tackle. How are we going to block this? There are so many times when the Texans are blocking one guy with two, the other team sending four guys, yet still somehow getting pressure. That's not a talent issue. That is, they're not getting coached up great.
Right.
Or maybe it's the communication within the offensive line, but I don't think it's a talent problem.
It's continuity and communication as the play is developing, because as the snap is happening and the tackle is normally committed to getting to the outside, you saw that either the tight end was even on the one play with Grenard, or there was another play where you had Stover down on that side too, but they both committed to the outside at the same time, and he stunted with a linebacker coming from the outside that decided to kind of spit to turn inside as he started his pass rush. And both guys are looking outside, and the linebacker comes untouched right up the chute. And all it took was the communication of, hey, I'm going outside, so you start inside. And then everybody kind of slides down the line. But we talked about it when it was musical chairs last year, and it was a big point of contention for me. It's not just about each single individual being good at their position, doing what they do. You can't build continuity when guys were constantly moving down the line, when Howard was going from tackle to guard and such. But the thing that Flores did was he was exposing the interior line as well. The tackle struggled, but then he also made to make sure to put a ton of pressure from just various different sources coming in from different angles on the interior line. And Shaq didn't look like his normal self. And it really had Scruggs a lot of times kind of looking like discombobulated, like where are they coming from next, head on a swivel. And Kenyon Green is still learning along the way, though he's been a lot better. And Flores was getting home up the middle, which I didn't expect. I knew they had pass rushers. I didn't expect them to get home as much from the middle.
That's where the pressure's been coming from the first 3 weeks of the year, though. Like, that's where the pressure came from against the Colts. That's where the pressure came from against the Bears. Like, I don't know why that's a surprise.
It's a surprise to me because a lot of times, and they tried to do it later in the game, but to no avail. They were bringing Ogunbowale. They were bringing Stover in to where they were trying to add an extra layer so that there was more congestion in the middle to slow down the rush a little bit. They couldn't slow down what Minnesota was doing no matter which way they were coming from.
Yeah, it's an issue. It's an issue. And I don't think the issue is talent, though. Like, the issue's either – could it be some continuity? Sure. I feel like you're going to look a little bit better, though. Like, even if it's not continuity, I think it might be a coaching thing. Like, so many times the Texans are not passing the assignment. They're not passing the coverage. You see Kenyon Green chasing an interior pass rusher because he loses him on a game or a stunt. And it's a problem. It's been a problem every single game, though.
There's one thing to say that a team uses a certain scheme when they block. But there's another thing to say within that scheme, there has to be the communication and the understanding of when we see this or we're feeling pressure from there, everybody, it's like in defense and basketball when you're rotating and you're sliding and you're covering the next man over. The offensive line similarly has to do that depending on where the pressure's coming from, and they have to understand that. It just didn't seem like anybody had any kind of continuity on that offensive line to help the helper, help the other guy that was trying to pick up the rusher if it was coming from the edge, or when the linebacker decided to come straight up the middle and the guys are focused on the outside rush. It was a problem, like you said, interior, it might have been a problem all year. It was coming from everywhere, and they looked like they had no clue.
Yeah, it's an issue. It's an issue. I think that's their biggest issue right now, quite frankly. Protection of C.J. Stroud.
I saw some people picking at the secondary. Okay, I wasn't that concerned about the secondary. It just seems like it is the number one most glaring issue. Yeah, you can say Tunsil himself, but overall as an offensive line, they didn't play well. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the tape and you watch the game again, you'll realize – none of those guys played well.
Yeah, and I think it's even beyond just the offensive line, too. I think you could just say pass protection. Like, you look at the couple of examples where Cade Stover was trying to block Grenard or Dalton Schultz was trying to block. The entire pass protection was poor. The offensive line has played poorly through three games, and if it's not a lack of talent, what is it? You know, you throw out continuity, could be. I'll throw out coaching, could be. Mm-hmm. It's not a talent thing, though, right? Like, you have three first-rounders on that offensive line. You have a solid veteran. You have a second-rounder. Like, it's not a talent thing to me.
No, it can't be because of the fact that, aside from salaries, but you went and committed salaries to guys that you thought were upper-echelon guys at their position. You brought in an experienced guy like Shaq to fill a need. You spent a first-round pick on your left guard. You did the kind of things that you were supposed to do with a quarterback the caliber of CJ to keep him upright, protected, and give him time. And it's not happening right now. And look at they had Campen. They've gone through like a multitude of offensive line coaches too. But at a certain point, it's not the focus because overall the offense didn't look good enough. Now that you know that you have weapons and you have a really good offense, the fact that you're seeing this kind of offensive line, you have to focus on the coaching.
Chris Strouser, offensive line coach. Just saying, first time we've heard Chris Strouser's name.
If you'd have told me that's their offensive line coach, I wouldn't have known. But now I think a lot of people are going to know and focus.
I think we got a Chris Strouser problem, guys. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. You got to have good offensive line to protect the quarterback, but we got a great C.J. Stroud. Well, how do we give C.J. Stroud's performance yesterday? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word from my good friend Doc Linville on the NeoGraft procedure, PRP treatments, and all the things that they can do to get your hair back. If you suffer hair loss and you don't think there's anything you can do about it and you're frustrated, you just really don't want to look at all the late night and commercial messages that are out there about foams and sprays and creams and gimmicks and all these things that just don't do what they're supposed to do. It just masks the problem. So you give up. You don't have to. All you have to do is get in touch with Doc Linville. He's right here in the medical center in Houston. He is a genius when it comes to getting your hair back. He's phenomenal. He's local. He loves the listeners in Houston that listen to ESPN 97.5. He'll give you a free consultation like I had to explain to you exactly how what he can do, what they do at the clinic, and how they get your hair back. And it costs you nothing. Nothing out of pocket, no signing on the dotted line, not $150 like it costs people off the street. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and book the appointment. Go in with an open mind. Let them explain to you what they do. Ask questions. Get answers. See if it's something you might consider. I didn't know anything about it until Doc did the consultation with me and he asked me to do it. Once I did it, I was committed that this is what I need to do and I'm really interested in how the results could help me. They have been phenomenal. They have been fantastic. If you watched the show Friday, if you were at the listener party, you saw the fact that my hairline is back. My hair is back. It's all the same color. It grows in the right direction. Everything is right about it because they are experts and they do a great job. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com. Set up that consultation. Go in open-minded and just see if it's something you might consider. They're not going to pressure you. They're just going to explain to you what they do. If you're interested and you have them do it, you will be glad you did. They're fantastic, and I couldn't recommend them enough. Go to 975hair.com right now.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
That's what yesterday felt like for the Houston Texans. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. Everything that went right for the Vikings. They even had a kicker drill the upright from like 55 yards or whatever it was, and it bounced in.
Yep.
Bounced in.
Sure did. Didn't bounce back. Didn't miss the crossbar. Snuck right in there.
Then you had your kicker miss one, who was the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. You had C.J. Stroud get a pass deflected on the second play of the game after a holding negated a 15-yard gain, by the way. That gets intercepted. It was one of those days. Yeah. It was one of those days. Their scheme, their game plan was perfect. Yours was not. One of those days. One of those days.
I think it goes back to what we were talking about at the end of last week, too, in the fact that this was not, when we looked at the schedule at the start of the year, the Vikings team I expected to see. And now coming out of this game, I was thoroughly impressed with the Minnesota Vikings. And I was not expecting to see a Sam Darnold run team, no matter who else they added and what they were trying to do defensively and offensively, to be that good. But they looked well coached on both sides of the football. They added the right weapons. Maybe they weren't all headline news, game-changing names. But the guys, aside from John Grenard, that they added, and we knew what Blake Cashman did a year ago, but Grugier Hill and Blake Cashman were complementary pieces that were doing their jobs too. The defensive line for the Vikings looks extremely solid. And Aaron Jones fits right in on the offensive side. When they get Addison back and they get Hockenson back, I mean, look, that's a team that I never was going to say was going to be in contention for a playoff spot. But the way they're playing right now, and especially when you get hot early in the season and you start stacking wins, that's a team that's got to be very well respected in the NFC.
I think you look at Darnold, you can point to Kevin O'Connell.
For sure.
Kevin O'Connell is a ball coach, and Brian Flores can coach up a defense. Darnold or Stroud, who played better yesterday? How are we grading this?
It's a no-brainer. I mean, as much as everybody thinks we can be C.J. Stroud homers, to me, it's a no-brainer that Sam Darnold played better than C.J. Stroud, and that's an easy call.
Yeah, Darnold outplayed him. Darnold was easily the better quarterback yesterday. I'm not a huge stat line when it comes to football, but Darnold threw four touchdowns, no picks. Stroud threw a touchdown, two picks. Yeah. One of them wasn't his fault, completely understand, but let's take that one away. One touchdown, one pick versus four touchdowns, no picks. Darnold was the better quarterback yesterday. I would give it a 10-8 round, quite frankly.
Yeah, I don't think it was close. I think that obviously from an offensive standpoint, there was no continuity and there was nothing to speak of in terms of rhythm. But Sam Darnold made all the throws. He did everything that he had to do. He never looked frazzled, which I thought you could get him to do. I'm with you. I think 10-8 or a TKO was easily the call for me in the fact that Darnold outplayed him.
Yeah, I would also give it a 10-8. I mean, if part of me wants to grade it on a little bit of a curve because we spent the first three segments of the show talking about how poorly the Texans were coached and how well the Vikings were coached. So both quarterbacks weren't working with the same thing, so to speak. But the results on the field, simply, it was a 10-8. Yeah, clearly Sam Darnold was the better quarterback.
All right, now how do we think Stroud played? How would you break down his game?
Look, I don't think he played great, and the two picks in itself, or one pick, or however you want to look at it, is one thing. I just think that it's tough because at a certain point, whether you want to call it happy feet or he just kind of had that feeling like it's time to get the hell out of Dodge in the pocket on almost every single play, a lot of times it's tough to play like that. But I thought he played average for a guy that's been playing above average since he's been a Houston Texan more times than not. I thought he played average and maybe slightly below average.
I actually think he played better than what he's getting credit for. I thought he made a lot of really good throws in this game. That drop it in the bucket throw to Nico was an elite throw. Like, that was an unbelievable throw. I even thought the touchdown was a good play. Yes, it was just like a dump off, but you had a free rusher that was right in your face. You made a good read. You flip it out quickly. I thought he handled that incredibly well. It's very difficult to play quarterback at a high level when the offensive line played as bad as it did. You mentioned the Schultz ball. I had that in my notes, too, when it's talking about Stroud. I thought he made a beautiful throw to Schultz, running right up the seam, over the top, hit Schultz in the hand. Schultz kind of like half measure jump up to try to catch it, doesn't make a play. The first interception, not his fault. Like, you know, he took credit for, or he took blame for it. Like, I got to sidewind it. I got to find a window. Like, that's a very difficult play for a quarterback. He made the right read. Tank Dell was wide open, got tipped, got intercepted. It's hard for me to put a whole lot of blame on Stroud for that one. And even the second interception, you're down by 17 with 14 minutes to play. It's a 3rd and 8 at your own 32. Like, trying to make a play in that spot, I understand. If it was like you're down by 3 or you're up by 3 late in the game and you're throwing that interception, that carries way more value, way more weight than being down by 17 with 14 minutes to play. I think he got a little bit gunslingery in that moment. I don't really care that he did when you're down 17 with 14 minutes to play, and it's a 3rd and 8. I think he was trying to make a play, didn't make the play, kind of made an errant throw. I thought Stroud played better than what people are saying.
Yeah, the tough part of it, because I agree with you, I think he did play better than the stat line would show. I mean, as we talked about, he was not put in a great position by his coaching staff, who decided to have Kate Stover try to block Jonathan Gennard. He was not put in a good position by his offensive line, who had a lot of penalties, especially Laremy Tunsil. But at the same time, this is now a pattern, and where we want to lay the blame, I guess, is the topic of conversation. But we're talking about 6 quarters now of bad offensive football, going back to the second half of the Chicago Bears game. Now, they're facing 2 good defenses, and this one's on the road. So it's there's going to be some excuses made for them. But whether it's CJ or the offensive line or the coaching staff, it's 6 quarters now of bad offensive football that somehow needs to be addressed.
Yeah. So I give it like a B minus for Stroud. I thought he was better than what it looked like. I think it was an offensive failure. I thought he had moments where he looked pretty good. I go B minus for Stroud.
I'm going C, and I just felt like, as much as you guys said, I saw times where I you can call it happy feet, but I just felt like he felt like, rightfully so, but every time he dropped back, he felt like he was going to feel it almost immediately, and he was constantly moving. And yes, I saw some great throws. The one that really impressed me, and I believe it was Akers coming out of the backfield, but he had a guy right up in his face mask, and it was a wheel route peeling out to the left side, and it also had to be a touch pass put out in front of the running back, and it was flat out dropped with a guy right on the running back as well, where you just look at it and go, not many quarterbacks can make that throw, and it should have been completed. But overall, because of how high the praise is, and I've been very quick to praise CJ, I just think it was average.
Yeah, I think I'd still give him a B minus, just because to me, CJ still showed in moments where his teammates did their job. It wasn't like he was failing when everyone else was doing their job. Now, CJ, we hoped, was a quarterback who could elevate to the point where he didn't have to have everything perfect around him, like a lot of what you would describe for game managers, like what you would describe for Matt Schaub back in the day, that he had to have everything perfect around him. I don't think CJ does, so you would like to see him elevate even when things break down around him. But you guys mentioned, you know, 4 or 5 great throws. I still thought we saw lots of special traits from CJ. I just don't, he didn't feel comfortable in the pocket. Everything was breaking down. His offensive line was breaking down. The play calls were breaking down. I think it was just one of those days, and I would still give him a B minus.
4-1-0-2. Sure, there were some good throws mixed in, but I agree with the notion that Stroud played below his capacity ability. Adrian, CJ played his first rookie-type game in his second season. That's not true. He played terribly against Carolina last year. He played terribly against the Jets last year, although he was probably concussed going into that game. Another one, 2585, CJ doesn't look the same. He's holding onto the ball longer, seems to be hesitant in some of his throws. He should have 4 or 5 picks this year already. They knew the Vikings blitz like crazy, yet they still didn't change their game plan. There were a lot of long developing routes on obvious blitzing situations, which were slower than Stroud.
Yeah, no, I think that's part of it. And again, that's where I go back to. I thought, even if you waited till halftime, I thought they were going to make adjustments. I thought that they would go to the quick passing game. I thought that they might go to, you know, some of the different ways that they could give CJ an extra second or a little an extra half second of time so that some things could develop, so that they could get some positive yardage, so they could get some momentum, and it just never changed. On both sides of the football, I was expecting more in terms of the adjustments in-game that didn't happen. But I'm not going to, like, I'm not crapping on CJ to the point where I like, lose faith in him. I think it's more so, I think overall, just like the penalties, coaches now, as much as we hear coach speak say, that's on me, I got to do better. No, you really do. I mean, this is the week to kind of look in the mirror and realize, hey, we got two wins in the first 2 weeks and all was sunshines and rainbows. Now that you face a little adversity, what are you going to do? You can't just sit there and go, well, turn the page, next game, Jacksonville, we'll just keep doing the same things. There's a lot to work on.
Well, of course.
But I'm saying, offensively, you can't just rest on your laurels. We got a lot of talent. We got a lot of weapons. We just run our system, and we're not going to make changes in-game. When you knew the way Flores was coming at you, when you saw the different looks that he was throwing at you and the pressure that he was getting, adjust. I don't think they made many adjustments.
Versace says, CJ disappointed me yesterday. Mannerisms during the game was not elite. I remember when Mahomes went off on his team on the sideline during the playoff games against Houston. I did not see it yesterday. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Is this the worst performance in the D'Amico Ryans era? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. Let's go.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.